Well, oh, well, folks, we have a great show in store for you all. A stacked one, to say the least. If you haven't heard, Fulton fired their football coach this week. John Winkler. John Winkler is a guy, you know, I've covered many high school football games throughout my time here in mid-Michigan, and definitely covered many Fulton football games. John Winkler did an outstanding job with Fulton High School and their football team. He goes down now, you know, since he's fired now, and now you can say former head coach of the Fulton football team. But he goes down now as the most successful varsity football coach in the school's history. Can you believe that? And they let him go this week. Fulton, the Fulton school board decided to dismiss Winkler in a special meeting of the board on Monday for what Fulton superintendent Damon Grifta called, quote, some past issues that arose regarding some of the values and ethics that the school tries to display at all times, end quote. Now, John led Fulton to an 89-36 record and a Division VIII state runner-up finish in 2007 during 11 years as head football coach. Again, he was fired as both, not only did he coach the football team, but he also coached boys baseball there for many, many years, over 20 years as the baseball coach there. And he was fired on Monday night by the Fulton School Board on Superintendent Damon Griffith's recommendation. It was said to be a unanimous vote, and it was really puzzling. It puzzled many throughout the area, and deservedly so, because when you look at it, again, this is the most successful varsity football coach in Fulton High School history, ladies and gents. The most successful of all time. And, you know, I remember, you know, going to games and interviewing John, and it was an outstanding job, you know, looking from the outside in. Of course, I want to throw this out there, too. I don't know what was going on behind the scenes, behind closed doors. I don't know what Winkler's relationship was with, you know, Grifka and the rest of the school board and personnel over at Fulton High School. But looking at the outside in, when you have such a successful record, when you have success like that, you know, this story sort of reminds me of the whole firing of Mark Jackson. In a way, you know, it reminds me in a way, you know, when you look at, you know, Mark Jackson, who was the head coach of the NBA's Golden State Warriors, you know, one of the most successful coaches in that franchise's history, and was let go due to some turmoil when it came to the front office. And he just wasn't getting along with the guys in the front office, and they decided to let Mark go. It really hurt a lot of the players because they were so close to Mark. And looking at this, and I want to, you know, go to a commentary that's in today's, if you haven't read today's Lansing State Journal, it's a great commentary write-up by reporter Scott Yashinis. And I definitely want to get Scott on the show soon to talk about this story because it's intriguing. It's really intriguing, again, because when you look at the success that John Winkler had throughout Fulton's history, and, you know, and you look at what transpired this week with his letting go, it makes you shake your head and say, what in the world was really going on? Now, again, Fulton Superintendent Damon Grifka came out and said that the reason Winkler was let go and the reason why this meeting was held when it came to his future with the Fulton football team was that there were some, quote, past issues that arose regarding some of the values and ethics that the school tries to display at all times, end quote. Now, just to read an excerpt here from Scott Yashinis. Again, he's a reporter for the Lansing State Journal who reports on high school sports and has done a great job sort of diving into this story. There are still many, many, many unanswered questions on this story. But just to read an excerpt from today's article, from this commentary, Scott says, quote, according to Winkler, the past issues were four instances of profanity over the past 2 years. One unsportsmanlike penalty by a player who waved his arms up after being called for a holding penalty, and an incident involving a player not on the team bus back from a game in Bath. Scott goes on to type, We have to go by Winkler's word on the specifics because Grifka refused to outline them in a telephone conversation we had on Tuesday. Grifka said, quote, I'm not going to elaborate on it. We had our meeting. He had his due process hearing. You have his side of the story, and you can use his side. I'm telling you our side, but details I'm not going to go into at this time. Again, that's from Superintendent Damon Grifka regarding the firing of John Winkler. Now, Scott goes on, just to continue reading a little bit here, bear with me a little bit here in Scott's commentary. He goes on, Scott goes on to say, if Grifka and the board want to provide those details, I'm listening. If not, there is no reason whatsoever not to believe that the administration wanted Winkler fired more than it worried about athletes and coaches using bad words. In the board's regular meeting back in January, Grifka proposed firing Winkler then, before baseball season this spring. The board rejected the firing, but chose to allow Winkler to coach baseball. And according to the minutes of the meeting, quote, the evaluation of this extra duty coaching position may determine future extra duty coaching positions, end quote. This spring, there were no issues, none. This situation is so interesting because, again, it seems as though that Winkler, there were some past issues going on, and we can only go on what the school board and Damon Grifka are alluding to. And those past issues they are talking about, again, are four instances of profanity over the past 2 years, one unsportsmanlike penalty by a player who waved his arms up after being called on a holding penalty, and an incident involving a player not on the team bus back from a game in Bath. Now, for me, and it's just my opinion, for me, looking at those three instances, they don't seem to be so alarming that you would have to fire a longtime head coach in John Winkler, who has had unparalleled success in the Fulton football and baseball program. Again, he's the most successful varsity football coach in the school's history. Looking at those instances, again, four instances of profanity, one instance of a player not making the team bus ride back from a game in Bath, and an unsportsmanlike penalty by a player who just threw his up arms, who threw his arms up in the air after a holding penalty. Looking at those instances, looking on the outside in this story, for me, that doesn't justify the firing of John Winkler, a man who, again, has had unparalleled success, who is a staple in the Fulton athletic community. There are many, many unanswered questions in this story that aren't being answered. And I'm curious as to those logistics to them. Now, we're definitely here at Current Sports WKR. I'm definitely going to reach out to John to see if he wants to come on the show and give his thoughts on this whole situation. I'm definitely going to talk to Scott, and we hope to have Scott Yashinis, who actually broke this story, and we're definitely going to have him in here to talk about this, because if you read his commentary, he feels the same way as I do. He feels the exact same way as I do, because when you lay out all those instances, as I just laid out, that's not enough to fire a coach who's been so influential in a high school athletic football program. It just doesn't add up. It just doesn't make sense. And, you know, for me, it looks as though, and you know, Scott outlined it in his article, it seems as though, just looking at those facts, it seems as though the school maybe had an ulterior motive in this whole thing. Maybe. Maybe they were just, they were waiting for a moment to fire John based on who knows what reasons. And they saw this as their window of opportunity, and they took it. Because, if you look at it, when the board had their regular meeting back in January, you know, Grifka proposed the firing of Winkler then, before the baseball season this spring, this year. But the board rejected the firing, and again, chose Winkler to coach baseball. And according to the outline in the meeting, it says, quote, the evaluation of this extra duty coaching position, meaning John Winkler coaching baseball, The evaluation of that duty may determine future extra duty coaching positions. Of course, that's alluding to him possibly coaching football for Fulton in the future. And again, this spring, there were no issues. No issues of anything documented, at least, at all when it came to John's coaching of the baseball team. No issues. But then you have this story where John is being fired. So many unanswered questions that we hope to get the answer to in the coming weeks. Again, we're definitely going to reach out to John. We're going to get Scott on the show to talk about this instance, and we definitely want to get your thoughts here on the show. Again, call us 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We want to get your thoughts on the firing of now former Fulton football coach John Winkler. He also coached the baseball team. Again, he is the most successful varsity football coach in Fulton High School history. You know, my grandmother always used to say, there's three sides to every story. There's one side, the opposition side, and hey, then there's the truth. So we'll see how this one pans out. Again, folks, we encourage you to weigh in on that discussion. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. All right, what a way to start today's show, folks. Well, I'm excited about today's show, not only about today's Current Sports Radio show, but also tonight's Current Sports TV show. That's right, you can catch Current Sports TV tonight at 10 p.m. as I will be sitting down with a Lansing Everett hoop great. He was such a player when he was playing for the Vikings back in the day. Desmond Ferguson, ladies and gents. Desmond Ferguson, he went on after Everett to have a pretty good pro career overseas. He played in a few minor league basketball teams here in the States, played for the Blazers for a little bit, and is now in the area, back in the area. Things have come full circle for him as he is now the head boys varsity basketball coach for the Lansing Everett Vikings. So, and he also is right now holding the Moneyball Pro-Am, which is a basketball tournament that is opened up to those of Michigan State men's basketball players. You have guys like Travis Trice, Denzel Valentine, and so on and so forth playing in that. You also have some MSU rookies who are on the team right now, such as Lou Rawls, Tum Tum Narwin. You have Aaron Harris, the transfer from Virginia. So, a lot of talent at these pro-ams. You even had Draymond Green. Draymond Green, who had an illustrious career for the MSU men's basketball team, who went on to get drafted by the Golden State Warriors. He came back and played in the pro-am, and again, is thrown by Desmond Ferguson, who this pro-am has been going on for quite some time. And you know what? Here on the Current Sports Radio Show, we love to give you a sneak peek preview, if you will, into our Current Sports TV interviews each and every Thursday. And you're going to get to hear a snippet of that interview tonight. Tonight, folks. Well, today, excuse me. I'm so used to acknowledging tonight on a TV show. But you're going to get to hear a sneak peek of that interview on today's Current Sports Radio show in about 10 minutes. So you don't want to miss that, folks. It's a big news with the Tigers. We'll talk to Tigers after you hear that interview as they beef up that bullpen with a nice acquisition from the Texas Rangers. How about that? We'll talk about that. And it's also Throwback Thursday. And, you know, before we get to our Desmond Ferguson sneak peek of Current Sports TV, we wrapped up our show yesterday by kind of alluding to Rory McIlroy's remarkable accomplishment over the weekend, winning the British Open. Rory was in vintage form, folks. He has now won three majors at the tender age of 25. I tell you what, if he keeps playing the way he did this past weekend, I mean, he's going to be something else, folks. Aaron now joins me. Aaron, first of all, how you doing, my brother? Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday. I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Oh, very, very well. Now, you and I chatted at the conclusion of yesterday's show on Rory McIlroy, and I kind of want to dive into that discussion because it's really an interesting one, because when you saw Rory McIlroy and the performance that he was able to put together throughout the British Open this past weekend, I mean, it was nothing short of remarkable. And what really stood out to me was, you know, not only the numbers he was able to put up, but the way in which he did it. I mean, it seemed as though Rory was so calm, he didn't let anything rattle him. I mean, there was nobody beating him that day. He seemed to be just locked in, laser focused. And, you know, there's been so much talk about, of course, Tiger Woods. Tiger, a man who's really been the face of golf for so many years, and he will continue to be until he retires, without a doubt. But with him going through this major drought, he hasn't won a major since 2008, and we all know what happened in that year as well around Thanksgiving, where he was involved with the whole, you know, divorce with his wife, and she came out and, you know, and with the golf club, and he ran into a tree. It was so much that right there was the moment of Tiger's demise, and it's trickled down the golf's peak as the world's best, I guess. And there's so many Tiger fans out there like me who are waiting on that moment, waiting for Tiger to get back to that moment of dominance, to get back on that horse. And we keep wishing so much. And we saw after the first round, I mean, after Tiger had that solid first round in the British Open, there were so many out there that were saying, oh, Tiger's back. He can definitely pull out this win. This could be his first major win. Even myself, I was drinking the Kool-Aid in that regard. But then you saw what happened in round two and into the weekend, and he just went totally ghost recall. And now, you know, and I brought up this question to you yesterday, Aaron. I'm not sure if there is a Tiger, if a Tiger effect even exists now today. Because we saw in the past when Tiger was in the field, I mean, golfers would come out and admit it sometimes in press conferences. They knew that they would have to bring their game. They were a little nervous. It was something else with playing against Tiger when he was at, you know, that prime level. But now, seeing the chink in the armor that has existed since 2008, golfers are confident going against Tiger. And that resignation of really bringing your A game when playing the man and having that quote-unquote fear of playing Tiger – hey, Aaron, I don't know if it even exists anymore.
No, I don't. No, I think that was gone. Actually, frankly, I think that was gone a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, for some players, I think it was still there. But at this point, I don't think you could name one player that would be intimidated by him. Maybe like if he got paired up with a junior that you're an amateur that made the cut or something like that. Maybe.
Right.
But no one on the PGA Tour is intimidated by him anymore. He just doesn't have that wow factor. I mean, the reason he was he was so intimidating was obviously he was so dominant, but you know, no one had a answer for him. They didn't know how to beat him. He had, you know, obviously he would have the biggest crowds following him, so all the people, anytime you were paired with him, you'd have to have just hundreds and hundreds of people watching you play.
Yeah, a lot of pressure is on you. All
a lot
eyes
of pressure
on you.
And you know, the other players weren't used to that, so I think, you know, that's gone now. He still has those people following, but they're not. It's not the same thing anymore.
Exactly, I agree. And you know, one of the biggest things that stands out to me is, you know, I'm one of the biggest Tiger Woods fans you ever meet. Even with Tiger's demise these past few years, Tiger Woods is still my favorite athlete. You know, that's the reason why I fell in love with the game of golf. It's the reason why I even tried to get out on the links and play the golf, and is why golf has become one of my hobbies. I mean, I love golf now, and a lot of that has to do with, you know, the dominance that Tiger Woods had a few years ago. And now, you know, if you look at Tiger's career, Aaron, Tiger, this is such a weird realm for Tiger, because he has never been comfortable with playing from behind. Even in his prime, when Tiger was dominating, you know, championship after championship, even when, you know, he didn't win a championship and he happened to be down going into the weekend, he has never really been comfortable at any time in his career with playing from behind. And you're starting to see Tiger having to adjust his mindset and adjust his game in that regard. And I don't know if he'll ever be comfortable with that. It was, which makes me wonder if he'll ever eclipse Jack's record now. Because Tiger, and you know, when he was dominating the game, you know, the game back, you know, back in the day, back in his heyday, I mean, it wasn't even close. Tiger was dominating throughout each and every four rounds. Nobody even came close to giving him any competition. It was a walk in the park for him. But now you're starting to see, as he's tweaked his game over the years and as he's had that incident in 2008 where he's had to shift his mentality, you're just seeing a different type of golfer. And I don't know when Tiger's going to get out of this funk. I'm done trying to predict it because I feel as though anytime Tiger has a good round, everybody's out there. The golf analyst comes out and says, oh, he's back. And I am so hesitant to say those words now just because I don't know if Tiger is comfortable, fully comfortable with his game, in specifically in the regard of having to play from behind.
No, I agree. And not to mention that media puts so much pressure on him to win. I mean, there's an insane amount of pressure for him to win majors. Now, a normal tournament, I mean, he still won five times last year, mind you, which is great because he had the most wins out of any player on the tour. But none of those were majors. So, you know, the media kind of just kind of brushed that off, really.
Yeah, yeah.
But anytime there's a major, you know, there's so much pressure on him. And I kind of have this idea, like, obviously this would never happen. What if the media just completely ignored him? Completely ignored him for one major. Maybe they, because the media wants him to win.
Right.
Because they want that story. It's going to get the headlines. What if they just ignored him for one major, completely ignored him? I wonder what would happen. Would he go out there and just shoot lights out?
Exactly.
I mean, the media wants it so bad. I think part of it is the media wants it so bad for him to win because they want that. They want to be the first ones. I told you so. I told you so.
Right. Right.
But the reality is every time he loses, doesn't win a major, I mean, it's going to get tougher and tougher. You know, he's 38 or 39. I think he's 38. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a lot of it is just he's got so much pressure on him.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, it's so funny because we've seen Tiger in the past. I mean, he used to deal with, you know, that pressure, you know, with like it was nothing. Like it didn't faze him. Now, with everything Tiger's gone through these past, you know, 3 or 4 years, you know, now you almost have to wonder if him playing a major, because you just talked about it. Last year, he had the most wins on the tour. He was player of the year. Didn't win a major, though. Now, it almost makes you wonder now, whenever Tiger plays in a major, it's a psyche thing, if it's a mental thing, if it gets to him mentally. And that's a legit argument because we've seen him win regular tournaments. But again, this major drought seems to have done something to him, and it's a valid question, Aaron.
Yeah, and I think his swing is there. I think it's from his injury. I think he still has to work on a few things, obviously.
Right.
That was clearly evident this, you know, for the Open. But you know, once he sort of figures that out and kind of, I still don't think he's 100%. He says he is, but I don't think.
Yeah,
he is.
I don't think he is either.
No, but I think once he figures that out, then it, like you said, it becomes just, it's all mental for him for the majors.
Right.
It's all mental, and he has to, like you said, he has to completely readjust how he's thought about the golf game and how he enters a, I mean, I don't know if he's actually admitted that, and he probably won't because he's Tiger Woods.
He's Tiger Woods, exactly.
Yeah, but he completely has to sort of just, his game has, and I think that's the difficult part for him to try to figure out how to do that properly.
Yeah, that is so, so true. Folks, again, if you want to weigh in on this, on anything we talk about here on Current Sports, again, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and also my Twitter page at Al Martin, WKAR. We actually have a caller right now, Apache, who wants to talk about the firing of Fulton football coach, now former Fulton football coach John Winkler. Apache, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, man, and welcome home from vacation.
Hey, thanks a lot. I enjoyed it, Apache.
Good, man, good, because I'm about to beat up on you. No, I'm just kidding, man.
Look, go ahead, man, I'm ready.
Hey, before I get started, as far as Tiger Woods is, man, I know what happened to him, why he's all messed up in the head, why he's all twisted. It was that Rodney King beating from his wife.
Oh, I know, right? Yeah,
that. And then she took half his money.
Right,
and,
exactly.
I mean, and it may not seem relevant. Okay, I remember when who was it? What was that dude's name, man? The guy that bit the fighter. What's his name?
Oh, Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson.
I'm sorry, man. My memory's short.
Oh, you're good.
Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson was invincible until that old man knocked him down in Japan. Okay,
right.
He was never the same. I've been beat up before, and it has a hell of a psychological effect on you. I think that's part of it. I think the embarrassment, all that. It's and like you said about the pressure, it just intensifies the pressure more. The only way he can get his dignity back is to get on top, and that's a misconception. You know, those are not mechanical issues. They're psychological, and he may never overcome those. But I want to get to that. The firing of the coach.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I think you have to be very careful not to sound like an advocate unless that coach is ready to advocate for himself publicly.
Right.
There may be something very, very uncomfortable for the school system and him as well that we're not told, and purposely not told, but they found an escape valve that's much more softer, you know, and good for everybody involved. As far as his record concerned, that shouldn't even be considered. And I'll give you an example, Joe Paterno.
Mm-hmm.
Joe
right.
Paterno had an incredible record, and that allowed him or this other guy to operate in the dark, in the shadows, because Joe Paterno had such a great record. So I just want
right.
The onus is on him to come forth, call a press conference, or get on your program and represent himself. I don't think anybody should advocate for him to any degree. I think you just should, like you're doing now, offering an opportunity to speak his mind and say what really happened or what he said happened. And be careful with it, because I know I wish you were here 15, 20 years ago. I got not only a head coach fired at a very prestigious local school, I got the entire staff fired, the athletic director fired, and eventually I got the superintendent removed. It took me 2 years. Okay, 2 years to do that, and I was pretty much alone, but I tapped all the resources I could, all the agencies I could.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things that go on. There's politics and everything, and you do not want to put yourself in the middle of it. And it's just, brother, be very careful and listen to an old man. You know, I've been there. I've been in some of those wars, and don't go out on a limb unless
right.
somebody else is out there too. You know what I'm saying?
No, so, I agree. And, you know, when you look at the story, Apache, that's what I'm saying. There are so many question marks, because just looking at what's laid out right now, just looking at the facts that are laid out right now, and looking at the quotes that have been quoted in various articles. Right now, just looking at those facts, there are so many question marks in this whole thing that just make you wonder. And just laying that all out, I want people like you to formulate their own opinion. And you better believe, as time goes on, as weeks go on, more will be said about this story. But looking at what's given to us as a journalist, as, you know, putting on my journalism hat right here, looking at what's laid out right here. I can see both areas where, for the superintendent, it looks a little shady because he's not giving us much here, and then for John, which he hasn't really come out and said much, with him not saying much, it also looks fishy on his end. So there's multiple question marks that will be definitely answered in the coming weeks. But as you said, this is the forum to do so.
Yeah, and you know, back in the day when Earl Robinson was there, he wouldn't touch something like this.
Right.
They wouldn't have allowed him to facilitate this kind of conversation, ask these questions, or anything of the sort. And I think that was a weakness of the program. I mean, you guys are incredibly bold in terms of some of the things you talk about, and I personally really appreciate that. They got programs all over the country that don't talk about local things like you guys talk about, and I appreciate that. I think it's time for people to show up and speak their mind, and you guys to facilitate those conversations. But other than that, man, I love your program.
Thank you, Apache. You always a great caller. Appreciate
it,
brother.
We need Falik now. Tell him to get his butt back here, man. We need him too.
I know, right? He'll be back this Friday. He'll be back this
good,
Friday.
Good.
All right,
man.
All right, Apache. Gotta love Apache, man. He's always a great caller. All right, let's hit the break. When we come back, we'll give you a sneak peek into my sit down with Desmond Ferguson. Yes, he's a Lansing Everett great who has come full circle now and is now the head coach of the Lansing Everett boys varsity basketball team. You don't want to miss that. Stay tuned. Current sports returns in the blink of an eye. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Well, each and every Thursday, we like to give you a sneak peek preview into my sit-down with our Current Sports TV guest. Again, Current Sports TV airs each and every Thursday night at 10 p.m. You can catch it tonight at 10 o'clock on WKAR-TV. And I'm sitting down with Desmond Ferguson. Desmond Ferguson was a hoop great in the area. He balled out for Lansing Everett High School, had a great career there, went on to play professionally overseas as well as the NBA with the Portland Trail Blazers. And is now his life has come full circle as he is now right back in the area as the head coach of the Lansing Everett Vikings. And you know, he has his hands in so many jars, and one of those jars happened to be the Moneyball Pro-Am. It's a Pro-Am in the area that takes place at Aim High. It will be going on up until August 7th at Aim High, and it takes place each and every Tuesday and Thursday, so you can actually catch it tonight. Three games will be taking place. The finals will be held on August 7th. And you have players from the MSU men's basketball team who are playing in it. You have, former Spartans from down the years playing in it. You have, NBA players such as Draymond Green for the Golden State Warriors who are balling out in it. You know, it's a very, very interesting event. And I had to start off my conversation with Desmond on just how the Moneyball Pro-Am began.
Well, we started actually 11 years ago, right after I got done playing with Portland. You know, I was wanting to use, my little celebrity or whatever at the time to bring a program here in the Mid-Michigan area, because when I grew up in, college and, early pro year, I always had to play in the Flint Pro-Am or down the St. Cecilia and Detroit Pro-Am. So I decided to bring one here to Lansing. We started then, and it's grown over the years, and, it's obviously peaked this year. Great talent, great players, fans been coming out. We switched it up, in the previous years we played on the weekends, and now we're going weekdays. So I think that has a lot to do with the success as well.
Now, Desmond, you talk about, during your playing career, you saw that there was a need for this area to have one. I mean, what does one get out of a Pro-Am like the one you're throwing right now?
Well, I think it's great for the kids that's coming out of high school, that's getting ready to go to play junior college or college level, as well as guys that's already playing at the college level. A lot of time offseason, that's for you to develop your skills and work on your game. And it gives those guys, in a game-like situation, gives a good competition to referees to apply some of the things that they've been working on over the summer. And then, like I said, the guys that's, fresh out of high school, it gives them a chance to play against college and pro level when they're used to playing at the high school level, and it gets them ready for, that college ball. So overall, it's about the players preparing them for whatever season they're about to begin, whether it be junior college, or even pro with the pro players that we have.
Desmond, how is the format of the Pro-Am set up? How many teams, how many coaches, how many players on each team? Can you kind of give us a rundown on that?
Yeah, we got six teams. We put 14 teams on the roster. Summertime guys are traveling and leaving here, so that allows us to consistently get 8 or 9 per team, with guys traveling. A couple teams had the coaches, the teams pretty much coach themselves, but we just try to line the teams up. The teams have bigs, they have guards, they have wings, they have scorers, and so forth. When you're dealing with Division I athletes in a Pro-Am, you can only have two players per school, per Division I per team. So that's what Michigan State may have, two on this team, two on the team, two on another team, Oakland, Western, Central, and so forth. So we try to divide the talent equally.
And you talk about it seems like a really relaxed atmosphere, like you're in the, playing some street ball, if you will, the players coaching themselves, like you just alluded to. Yeah. I mean, I want to talk about some of the performances that you've seen so far and some of the players that have stood out in this year's Pro-Am so far. I mean, what have been some of the big performances that you've seen?
Well, you take a guy like Denzel, you're able to see his development of really becoming a leader and having that type of confidence. I mean, we've seen it at the high school level where he won back-to-back state championships, but now I think he's getting the role of being a leader at Michigan State, and you can see the ball is in his hand more, and that's what Denzel is, a playmaker. So he's been playing well. Travis Trice has been playing well. Kay Felder, who plays at Oakland University, he was a newcomer of the year in the Horizon Conference. Mm-hmm. He's playing well. So it's a lot of guys. I mean, you got our Lansing guys that's playing overseas, and Justin Ingram and Derek Nelson and Jonathan Jones, who started at Oakland's High School. So we got a lot of young local guys that's been doing well as the Michigan State guys.
Exactly. And I think Denzel had, 7 threes this week?
Yeah, he's shooting the ball,
my
man.
My goodness. He's sounds like my jump shot.
Looking real good. good.
That's great stuff. Yeah. All right, Desmond, now you growing up in this area, you had one unbelievable career, especially when looking at your high school career at Lansing Everett. I mean, it was really remarkable to go back in that time, because I've had certain callers who have called in on the radio show, mm-hmm. Current Sports Radio, on Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock to 2 p.m. Tune in, folks, on WKAR AM 870. And, you know, we've had callers call in, especially when, you know, on the eve of the pro-am, people getting excited to go out there and check out the talent from MSU and beyond. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people will bring up your playing career right here in the area. And, you know, there was so much buzz when you were playing, especially when you talk about the rivalry with you and Ryan Banks, who's now also a coach in the area. I mean, if you could pick out one favorite high school basketball memory from when you played in this area, what would it be and why?
Well, you touched on playing against Sexton. You know, that was our high school rival.
Yeah.
You know, I played football and basketball, and I never beat Sexton until my senior year.
Really? It took that long?
Yeah. So our senior year regular season, we split 1-1, and we met up again third time in the districts. You know, we played at Eastern Fieldhouse. You know, I remember like it was yesterday, great close game. Izzo was in the building, you know.
Izzo was
there?
Yeah,
checking me out, packed house. We ended up winning. I got a dunk right at the buzzer. You know, game was already decided, and then, you know, all my friends and family jumped, ran on the court and everything, and, you know, we finally overcame that hump of beating Sexton in advance and, you know, going on to the regionals and so forth. So that's a memory that I have, you know, finally beating Sexton and you beat my rival like Ron Banks. You know, always had a good team. You know, he is obviously a great player, and now he's a good coach as well. But, you know, those rivalries with Sexton is what I remember a lot.
So a buzzer beating dunk at
It wasn't buzzer beating.
Oh, okay.
I just
about
dunked
to say.
At the buzzer. You know what I'm saying? The game was already decided.
I was about to say,
six or eight or ten, whatever it may have been, but yeah.
Right. And, you know, you talked about, you know, of course, Ryan Banks, who's now the head varsity boys basketball coach over at Lansing Sexton. And you guys are both coaches now in the area. Sort of a rivalry renewed, if you will, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, me and Ron have a long history. You know, we played against each other. Then we played with each other in middle school. And in high school, we played against each other. And now here we are coaching against each other. And, you know, Ron has, you know, I think Ron has a great testimony himself, you know, because he was a, you know, basically All-American type player. You know, had to go to junior college. Things didn't work out. Sat out for a while. They ended up going to LCC to get his education. Helped him get to the Nationals. Went on and got his college degree down at the, you know, the University of California, Pennsylvania. So already working and having a family and stuff like that. So he has a great testimony for these kids to teach them some things. And ultimately, that's what it's about. We want to teach them a game of basketball, but we want to teach them the game of life as well. And, you know, I went down a certain path. He went down a certain path. And we can share that with today's youth in Lansing now.
That is so important, Desmond. What's the relationship like between you guys? You guys pretty close friends then?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, Ron is someone I consider a friend and, you know, someone that, you know, like I said, we go way back. Our families know each other. So it's good that we can coach against each other and, you know, try to will our team to victory as coaches, not as players, because we don't have the direct, you know, we can't directly shoot a basket anymore or defend or make a three or whatnot. But now we got to try to, you know, put guys in the right situation to win a game.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I got to ask about the upcoming season. I can't believe it's about to be August already. I'm sure you're kind of prepping your team in the offseason for the Lansing Everett boys basketball team. How is this year's upcoming team looking, and what are you encouraged about looking forward?
Well, I'm looking forward for us is year three. You know, usually, you know, that determines when you come in as a coach what type of program you have and the steps that you've taken. We've had a great summer, month of June. Our first two seasons record-wise wasn't what we wanted to be, but we took steps and we became much better. You know, we played in a lot of camps, a lot of games this past June. Got a lot of returning players. Basically, our whole team is returning. So I think that's a plus. And we have a good mix of, you know, some height, some guards, some guys that know what we're trying to do as a coaching staff now. And I look forward to a much improved season moving forward.
Dez, with those struggles, I mean, what have you learned about yourself as a coach during this time, moving into year three?
I've learned that I've had to be patient. And that's one of the key things that I've had to be, you know, when developing the program and getting it back to, you know, a rightful place in the city of being the top team, the best team in the city, because that's what Everett has been historically. So really, really, really patience, and then just, you know, instilling confidence in these young men, these boys, you know, to become men, just from a life standpoint and from a game of basketball standpoint. So, you know, the teaching aspect is really what I enjoy in the end, but most of all, I've learned patience.
Yeah, that patience is certainly a virtue, to say the least.
Yeah.
All right, Desmond, well, I want to transition now into, of course, you're rocking it right now. It looks pretty fly. The Moneyball Sportswear.
Definitely.
You got a clothing line, too, man. You're doing it all. How did that start?
Well, I started Moneyball Sportswear back in 2002. You know, unfortunately, a lot of athletes, they play the game for a long period of time, but after they get done, they don't have anything to do or anything to fall back on. I was able to get my business management degree from the University of Detroit Mercy in 2000. So my first year playing ball overseas, I was thinking about about, you know, what I want to do when I get this money or what I would do when I get done playing. You know, so like I said, so often people don't think about till they get done playing. But I knew because of my love for the game of basketball, I still want to be involved some shape, form, or fashion with it. So the idea of doing basketball uniforms came to mind. At the time, I didn't know how that's going to happen, but it just came to mind because when we were in high school, our uniforms looked the same. The only thing that was different was the color or the name across the chest.
Right.
And playing overseas, I finally met some manufacturers that could make the uniforms. So we started off doing basketball uniforms. Now we're doing football, baseball, soccer, volleyball, everything. And then we obviously have our retail side of things where we have the different T-shirts, you know, sweatsuits, just sportswear apparel overall. And, it's been growing. You know, it's been 12 years now. It's a constant grind, but I was able to play basketball for 11 years and transition right into, you know, running in the business full time.
So now with the Moneyball Sportswear, I mean, if for those out there that need jerseys for their teams, I mean, how can they get involved? How can they contact you
They can hit me on my email, dferguson@moneyballsportswear.com. Check out our website, moneyballsportswear.com. And then we have the store on the south side of Lansing, right on the corner of Pleasant Grove and Holmes, 2121 West Holmes Road, Suite C. So that's where our store is, and our phone number, 517-393-0763. So those are the ways you can get in contact with us, but definitely check out our website.
There you have that, folks. And of course, there's a common theme with all of this. We just talked about the Moneyball Pro-Am. We're talking about Moneyball Sportswear. Moneyball is the name you hear all the time, and it's synonymous with this man right here, Desmond Ferguson. Dez, I gotta ask you, what does this Moneyball fiasco mean? How in the world, explain the meaning behind Moneyball. How did that name come about?
Well, it was a nickname that I received back when I played high school ball, high school AAU ball, after my senior season. I played with Team Michigan out of Detroit. We had, you know, four top players in the country when you talk about Albert White, Robert Tractor Trailer, Terrence Roberson, and then, you know, obviously Kevin Garnett. These were consensus top 10 in the country.
Impressive, yeah.
Yeah, so one particular weekend, we went down and played in Solon, Ohio. I remember, and KG came up and played with us, Kevin Garnett. You know, he stayed in Chicago at the time.
Right.
And him and Robert Trailer were real close. You know, they played in a lot of McDonald's All-American games and All-Star games. So a lot of people don't know, you know, if he didn't go pro, he was either going to South Carolina or Michigan. You know, but obviously he went pro and, you know, the rest was history. But
right.
One particular weekend, you know, I'm known as a shooter. Here I am playing with these All-Americans, and I'm barely All-State, and I'm knocking down shots from deep, you know what I'm saying, almost half court. I'm talking about, that's probably the best I shot from as deep ever in my life, you know what I'm saying, at that point in time.
Just we're in a zone.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, you had all the coaches in the building, you know, Tarkanian, Calipari, Bobby Huggins, everything.
Yeah.
So I was hitting. Every time I would shoot, you know what I'm saying, while the ball was in the air, Kevin Garnett would yell, Moneyball, and I was just hitting. So then that became my nickname. So even now to this day, when I see Kevin Garnett, you know, if you ask him who Desmond Ferguson is, he's going to be like, you know, who was that? You say Moneyball, he's going to go crazy and go wild. So he's the same individual, you know. But I credit Robert Tractor Trailer, rest in peace, as well as Kevin Garnett for the name Moneyball.
Gotta love it. That's a pretty impressive story Dez. All right, before we transition now and get to the 12th man and take questions on our social media pages, I want to, we love to talk about topical things on this show, areas where we've really had a lot of debate on the radio show. We try to bring that to the TV show and ask our guests about certain things as well.
Right.
Now, I don't know if you saw, Dez, but there's a video of a kid recently who's playing, you know, he's about 11, 12, 13 years old, playing youth basketball, and it went viral. I mean, it's all over the internet, on YouTube and everything. And there's a video of him actually flopping to win a game. He flops, his team gets the ball back, they go down and score, and that's all she wrote. Flopping is a topic that is so touchy in the world of basketball because you see so many doing it. It's a trickle-down effect. You can't turn on an NBA game without seeing at least one area of flopping.
Right.
You know, LeBron James has been criticized about it left and right. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on flopping, and is it getting out of hand?
Yeah, it's getting out of hand. I don't know at what point that it started getting out of hand like this. You know, when I think of flopping, I think of the playoffs back when Lakers were playing Sacramento, and Shaq was talking about how Vlade Divac used to flop all the time.
Oh, yeah, right.
You know, and, you know, it was a fine line between taking a charge and completely faking. But now you see a lot of completely fakers out there, you know, that's faking the charge or not even coming close to getting charged or whatever and flopping. So,
yeah.
Obviously, the NBA is taking a hold on it as far as giving fines or whatnot. But I believe that, you know, you gotta stand your ground. Now, if you take a good charge, that's great defense. But if you just hoping the referee to bail you out, especially in close, tight situation, then that's something you shouldn't be doing. And it's obviously become more popular, you know, whole flopping, I guess, in a bad way. But like you said, LeBron, you know, people say LeBron flopping, and a lot of people flop. But,
yeah,
you know, it's definitely gotten out of hand.
Do you see it a lot in the high school? You being a high school coach, do you see? Have you seen it at all in the high school area?
You know, that's what's crazy. Like, from my time of playing and, you know, even coaching now, I don't see flopping a whole lot, you know. At the same time, I think a lot of emphasis is put on it. So even if anything is close to a flop, you know, people kind of blow it out of proportion. But I really haven't come across it much as a coach or as a player.
Well, let's hope it stays that way. All right, Dez, you got 5 more minutes?
Yeah, definitely.
Stick around, brother, because the 12th man starts right now. Well, it is time for the 12th man, and on this week's 12th man, we are going to go to our social media pages at facebook.com/currentsports and my Twitter page at AlMartinWKAR. And Dez, many people have some questions for you in the social media atmosphere. You ready?
Let's do it.
Let's do it, man. First question. Sean from Colorado wants to know, yeah, everybody's talking about this man, right? What did you think of LeBron James' decision to return to the Cleveland Cavaliers?
I think it was a great decision for the game of basketball. You know, so many people put emphasis on guys stacking teams and teaming up to win championships like that. Now, that eliminates that. So he won the championship. Now, it's all the way legit. You know, it's his team. He put a team together or whatnot, had guys come play with him in Cleveland. But I think overall it's a great decision. It's something that obviously was in his heart that he wanted to do. Now, if they won his championship in Miami, I think he stays there. But with them losing, I think that allowed him to go back home sooner than he would have went before, because he's going home sooner or later.
And you and I were talking before the show, and you're a LeBron James fan. You love his game. I love his game, too. He's the best in the world. But if he would have went to anywhere but Cleveland, I mean, he might have lost a fan in you, right?
Yeah, I would have lost some respect. I think I would have still been a fan of, you know, what he does on the court, but just, you know, what he stands for. And, you know, that seemed like he just jumped from ship to ship, you know, trying to win a championship. And that wouldn't be good when you consider the best player in the world.
So true. All right. Thanks a lot, Sean. Okay, next question. Steve from East Lansing wants to know, should there be a shot clock in high school hoops? Interesting.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I think so. I think probably about 35-second shot clock would be ideal, not the 24 like NBA or whatnot. But
and why
it should be, because, you know, the stall ball, you know, you can hold the ball for a minute and this and that. And no, let's play. Let's play. Let's get up, play some defense. Let's play some offense. And let's attack on both ends and best team win.
Have you been in a situation like that these past two seasons where a team has done that, played stall ball and just ran out the clock and won a game?
We haven't ran into it much, but I've been at many games and seen it. And as a fan, it's boring. You know, I come there to see some action. I don't come to see nobody just sit on the ball for a minute and a half and then you got to foul or whatnot. So, yeah, I would like to see it. I'm a big proponent of having a shot clock in high school basketball.
Good question, Steve. Appreciate that. Okay, let's go to Michelle from Chicago. What's some key advice you can give to future entrepreneurs trying to get a business started?
Make it happen. So many times that people feel, I got to have this business plan, I got to have this paper, I got to do this right. Yeah, you got to get that right eventually, but don't let things like that stop you or deter you from going ahead and starting to move on with your business. And then don't be afraid to fail, because, you know, not only in life, but in business, you're going to fail as well. But experience is the best teacher, so just go for it in all aspects of the business.
Desmond Ferguson, head coach of the Lansing Everett Vikings boys basketball team. Man, oh man, it was great sitting down with Desmond. Again, you can catch that episode of Current Sports TV in its entirety tonight on your televisions, 10 p.m. on WKAR TV. Well, we have about 5 minutes left in the show. I want to give you guys a quick throwback Thursday, looking at what happened on this Thursday, July 24th in sports history. Not much happened on this day. You know, I tell you what, Matt leaves for his first Throwback Thursday, and there's really nothing to talk about on Throwback Thursday. But just to give you guys three events here. 1978, Billy Martin was fired for the first of three times as manager of the New York Yankees baseball team. In 1984, Terry Bradshaw, one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play, retired from the National Football League. And in 2005, Lance Armstrong won his seventh consecutive Tour de France. Of course, the Tour de France is going on right now as we speak. You know, it was interesting, 30 for 30 as well, as 30 for 30 commemorated the Tour de France with an interesting documentary entitled Slaying the Badger. Didn't get a chance to check it out, but looking at the reviews, it was pretty, pretty good. You know, Aaron, you know, I'm always intrigued about the 30 for 30s. I'm a big fan of them. I actually have one of the 30 for 30 collections on DVD at my apartment right now. But I'm intrigued to ask you this question, man, because everybody has different, you know, opinions on it. If you could make an ESPN 30 for 30 on any topic in sports, what would yours be?
Oh, man.
That's tough, right?
That is a tough question. Yeah. Only one?
Just one, yeah. If you could make, if you could produce and direct one, what would it be?
Oh, man.
There's so many. I have about 5 or 10 on my list.
I'm trying to think of just something sort of what's... Oh, something that's sort of hot right now, you know, something that's going on right now.
Right, right, right.
It would be, I mean, if you really wanted to go all out, sort of the, really what goes on the inside of college football, the stuff you don't see. I mean,
yeah,
there's a lot of stuff that we don't see for a particular reason.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
And so, yeah. You know, but, you know, something like that would take so much work and then – you know, you would, a lot of times you're probably going to get denied and you'd probably have to set up secret stuff. And
right. Yeah, that's true, because the recruiting world is so, so sticky. And, you know, it's interesting because they had Nick Saban and Bob Stoops on ESPN this week, and they were talking about the recruiting wars and, you know, what's the craziest thing a recruit has asked them to do and all that kind of stuff. And there's so many behind the scenes, you know, things that go on that we don't see, but we possibly eventually hear about, you know, years down the line. And we know with the North Carolina scandal, I don't want to put the word scandal on it just yet, with the former basketball player who talked about how he was, you know, given passes on his test and, you know, his professors let him slide through a few classes due to him being, you know, playing in the NCAA tournament. But that would be a very, very intriguing one. And possibly, you know, Michael Sam may be a good one as well. But there's so many. There's so many dwindled down to just one. But that would be, I would definitely watch that one, without a doubt. All right, folks. Well, 2 minutes left in the show. Again, we are running out of time, but we want you to go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/currentsports, and also tweet me at Al Martin WKR. Weigh in on your thoughts, just like our caller did today. Apache, thanks a lot for calling in. We definitely want to get your thoughts, and we'll read it live on the air doing tomorrow's Current Sports on what exactly you think about the whole firing of John Winkler. Now, he is the former football coach of Fulton High School. He coached baseball there as well for over 20 years. And a really interesting story with a lot of question marks, and we want to get your thoughts on it. Again, visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and tweet me at Al Martin WKAR. Also there, you can also give your thoughts on the Tigers' new acquisition of pitcher Joakim Soria. Soria was an all-star in 2008 and 2010 with the Royals. This season, he has, he's been very, very solid for the Rangers. He's a righty, and the Tigers are really trying to, you know, have the mentality of a win now mentality, and they definitely showed that with this move. Do you like Soria, the Soria acquisition for the Tigers? Leave a comment, facebook.com/currentsports, and tweet me at Al Martin WKR. I'll read that on the air tomorrow to kick off our show. We are out of time, folks. Catch Current Sports TV tonight as I sit down with Desmond Ferguson. You also get to see part one of my Ronald Mann special. Oh, he's an intriguing guy. You'll get to see that and so much more. Current Sports TV tonight at 10 p.m. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing. As always, take care. Have a fantastic Thursday. And hey, be easy, people.